You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who travels so he can pretend he's on the lam, Pete Chwaba.
Welcome to Nightlight, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome. I feel like I should welcome people back because we are coming off of a holiday weekend, but most people were already back. I took an extra day, so I still have that holiday hangover.
You had a little vacation time in there.
I did. I got some vacation time. I'm not going anywhere extravagant this summer, so I thought, well, I'll take a couple days here. And that was the voice, folks, by the way, of the amazingly talented Todd Michaels. Todd, how are you?
How was your vacation, by the way? How was your fourth?
My fourth was okay. I didn't do much. We have a porch that overlooks a field in our little community, and I watched my 24-year-old son and his friends play wiffle like they were 12 years old, and I had a non-alcoholic beer and sat in the sun. And
Did you rock in your rocker and scream at the kids playing in your yard?
You know, oh, this is interesting that you say that. We had, okay, so we signed up for Brightspeed. Because where we live, Todd, Spectrum has held, they've had a monopoly, and they just jacked it.
I never heard of Brightspeed. So for those of you who don't know, it's internet, right?
It's internet. It's fiber optic as opposed to cable. Oh, okay. So this guy came through with his highfalutin Segway. Literally, he's riding around the neighborhood in a Segway. And it was like a lot cheaper. So we signed up. And then I thought, oh, man, I might need a cable if I broadcast from home. So I don't know if this was that great. And then I wasn't getting the signal on my porch. And I hadn't canceled Spectrum yet. So I called Spectrum to cancel, thinking they'd take the bait and offer me a sweetheart deal. And they did. They cut their own prices in half.
Right.
I said, all right, I'm with you. But what got me off on this tangent was we've had this fiber optic cable on the lawn because they haven't come and buried it yet. So my grass is like a foot tall. We look like the idiots on the, you know, in the hood. Exactly.
What's going on at the Schwabba's house?
What's going on at the old Schwabba place? Looks like they got some highfalutin long grass. Anyway, it was good. And I have to ask this, though, and maybe you can relate. Todd Michaels, by the way, I was just about to introduce you. You jumped in with a joke about me, which is fine. Todd Michaels is producing the show, folks. The K-Man, Conrad, as you know him, the lovable producer Conrad, will be back tomorrow, God willing. And in the meantime, it's always fun when Todd Michaels sits in, and it's great to have him here tonight. How are you doing, Todd?
I'm good.
Are you?
Yeah. 4th of July, though, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
I was the old guy.
How so?
Well, so I live in Oshkosh, right?
Yeah.
And they did this big thing this year that in the past, if the police came to your house because of, you know, fireworks and stuff, it was a warning, blah, blah, blah. This year they decided they were going to nail you with a fine right away.
Really? Okay?
So I'm thinking, great, because my dog doesn't like it, you know, and all that kind of stuff. 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, Friday night into Saturday, they're still shooting stuff off in the city. And it's rocking the whole house. So I'm the old guy going, shut up out there. You know, I literally at one point, you know, opened my window and screamed at the neighbors about it.
So you were the old man.
Old man Michaels in the house.
Why do they do that, though? Wrap it up at 11 o'clock or midnight.
I would say midnight, right? Yeah. I was okay with that.
Right.
2 o'clock? Come on.
I'm over fireworks. I know I sound like a curmudgeon, but... And luckily, we have a guy in our neighborhood who shoots them off, so I have to walk literally 30 feet. So I can't not watch that because everyone's down there, and it was fun. There were a lot of people visiting from out of town, so I have to watch fireworks, but kind of done with it. But that's not what this show is about, ladies and gentlemen. Todd Michaels, riding shotgun tonight. Great to have you, buddy. And I will ask you this. Why is it that I get my rest after a vacation? Like... Well, I had both kids home. Their friends are, sometimes our basement turns into like, I don't know who's sleeping down there, but
right.
There's a ton of people. And I stay up later. I don't get, like, I literally could not wait. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to bed early tomorrow night. It's going to be great. now that I'm back to work and right. can catch up on my sleep.
Yep.
You know, isn't that insane? That's like a backwards way of thinking.
But a lot of people, when you take vacation, there's so much you want to get done, right? Whether it's stuff around the house or maybe have a little fun, go do this, go do that. And when the vacation wraps up, if you have a vacation, then, you know, it's you're so wound up by the end of it that you're looking forward to getting back into the swing of things.
Exactly. And I had to, you know, I had to deal with some stuff over the break too. We need a new roof.
Oh my.
We need to have our house stained. We just put $4,000 into a 99 Land Cruiser that I love, that I'm never getting rid of. So I spend $4,000 on it. And that's like $20,000 worth of stuff.
Just over the 4th of July holiday.
Towed my way through the 4th of July. Ah, it's just money. Come on.
That's how you celebrate America, spend money on stuff.
Exactly. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you had a 4th. It is a great 4th. It is great to be back live on the air. Hope you enjoyed the shows we put together over the break. Conrad worked very hard at that, putting them together. I worked very hard talking, so he had something to put together.
Right.
But it was a group effort, and I hope you had a great 4th. And it's great to be back on the radio, listening to us talk about the things that everybody should be talking about. Movies, TV, comedy, music, theater, and anything fun happening in Wisconsin. And we have a great lineup tonight. Joining me at 6:35 will be author Tamara Dean. She wrote a book called Shelter in Storm, At Home in the Driftless. The Driftless area of Wisconsin, I'm kind of enamored with. It's so beautiful so different and so cool and funky. And, you know, reading about how the glaciers kind of passed over the area, I don't even want to paraphrase because I read parts of her book and it's fascinating. And she is someone who kind of, you ever see the movie Lost in America with Albert Brooks?
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of drop out of society. They liquidate everything and they rent to Winnebago.
Right.
And their first stop is Las Vegas. And the wife gambles their nest egg away. Brilliant, hilarious, and cringeworthy. Tamara and her husband, at least if the book is accurate, and I assume it's not because it's, I assume it is because it's nonfiction, bought some land in the Driftless area and they were trying to make a human, we'll have to ask Tamara about this, but it's a human running house. Like everything, it's adobe. They made the bricks out of mud. They're farming all this stuff that I would never do in a million years.
Right.
But I have the utmost admiration for someone who would do something like that. Just because she was at a .com. Anyway, the book is great. I'm very excited to talk to Tamara. She has not been on the show before, so this will be a nightlight first, talking about the book Shelter in Storm, At Home in the Driftless. Then at 7:20, our pal Chris Foran joins us. Chris is an entertainment writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And, you know, Chris comes on to talk about movies and TV. And, you know, we talked about Summerfest, music, all kinds of stuff. He's a very informed guy, as you would expect an entertainment writer to be. But he wrote this great article about the 50th anniversary of Miller High Life and how it's, not Miller High Life, Miller Lite, which kind of saved the company and started the light beer trend. And there was a lot of controversy around it at the time. But Miller Lite came up with this great ad campaign, as many of you probably remember, the Taste Great, Less Filling. And Chris wrote a great piece that you can check out in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He does great work there. He'll be here at 7:20 to discuss that article and some movies. He's seen a lot of stuff. I'm excited to talk movies with Chris. So that'll be at 7:20. In the meantime, Todd and I will have all kinds of tomfoolery planned tonight on the show. And I think we should get to our, Todd, you're the producer tonight, so I'm not going to demand anything, but should we get to our question?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's talk about the question.
Okay, question.
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 Pregunta.
Question.
Question.
Hey, I have a question.
Questions.
This question.
Domanda.
Question.
Question.
Questions.
Yesterday was National Dive Bar Day. What makes a bar a dive bar? That is tonight's question, folks. Yesterday, or in honor of yesterday's National Dive Bar Day, what makes a bar a dive bar? And I have two quick answers. The first things that came to my head.
All right.
Stickiness.
Yep. Yeah.
And a girl dancing at the jukebox. Those are my two. And I love dive bars. I've been in so many dive bars over the year. Back when I was in stand-up or when I was, you know, living in L.A., I had a place down the street. Wisconsin has tons of great dive bars. But I'm very anxious to see what people come up with on this question. Do you have a response for that?
Well, I'll say this. In Oshkosh, I think they were voted best dive bar in America.
I
Pete's
think I heard
Garage
this.
Bar.
Yeah.
That is the place. And it's got some of what you talked about. It's got the stickiness. It's got the furriness on the walls at the top where the air, you know, kind of is coagulated on the ceiling tiles and stuff like that. But they've got they've got the bar, and then behind the bar is the actual grill where they make all the food, right?
Okay.
And each of the bartenders takes a turn grilling your food, making your, you know, breaded mushrooms or French fries or whatever they're making. And there's a great neon sign above it that says that they're still cooking, okay? But it uses expletives in what it says. We're still blanking cooking, or the grill is still. I've got a picture on my phone. I'll show you later.
All right. Can we post it? Probably
not. No, probably not. I'd get fired.
Well, some expletives in signage, I think, constitutes a dive bar. I'll also say another one, the couple dancing when there is not a dance floor.
Oh, Lord.
Two people.
And no music playing.
No music is in their hearts, but they're just slow dancing with nothing going on. They don't care that people could see them. Maybe there is not music. Maybe there is. I don't know. But those are great dive bar characteristics. The peanuts in the bowl where it's a wash with fecal matter, you know that, and popcorn, and you can go serve your own popcorn. They're following no regulations whatsoever.
And nobody's making them. There's nobody from the city or the state walking in and going, okay, you can't do that. For some reason, you can get away with it.
People that walk into a dive bar know what to expect. They're not going to complain about that stuff.
Right. So that's what they want. Yeah, that's what you want.
Exactly. You want filth. And in all different manners. So, folks, be part of the show, please. This is tonight's question. Yesterday was National Dive Bar Day. What makes a bar a dive bar? And you could text us at 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can let us know on the app if that's your choice of listening to Nightlight. That's totally fine as well. I believe most of our listeners are on the app, Todd, if I'm not mistaken.
If I remember
the demographics. And if you're watching in the stream, go ahead and let us know there too. Be part of the show. We'll read your text on the radio. Have I been yakking that much?
You have. We're down to 2 minutes.
My God. Really?
You know what it is? It's the banter between host and producer.
I think so.
It flows.
It does. It's beautiful. People love hearing us talk.
That's about why. Screaming at people from our front lawn.
I would have paid money to hear you do that. I think, and you can get these episodes, folks. If you missed a witty banter or comment, you can always go to the website and check out the podcast as well. I said something the other day. I've complained before on this show about how you tip at the counter and then you take your food before you realize that you tip before you realize, oh, I got to wipe off my own table too. Not only is no one waiting on me, I have to wipe off my table and then I'll bust my tray. The restaurant should tip the customer. I think that's where we're headed.
I will tell you, at Pete's in the dive bar, if you're not paying attention when your food is up, because they don't bring it to you, there's no waitresses or anything like that. If they're screaming at you that your thing is done and you don't go get it, they will take a coaster and they'll whip it at you to try and hit you in the head. That's why I like Pete's.
Can you imagine if I got hit by a coaster? If Pete got hit by a coaster at Pete's, you know what that would mean?
What's that?
I'd be rich.
You think so?
I would sue their asses. Damn right I would. I almost hope that coaster finds me. Folks, Todd Michaels is sitting in for the kid Conrad Krieger tonight. Conrad will be back tomorrow. It is great to be back in the air talking to all of you, and I hope you talk back. Text, let us know what you're thinking throughout the course of the show. Got some fun guests and a great question tonight. When we come back, I don't know, I saw Jaws again. Maybe we'll talk
Did
about
you?
That.
Yeah. Okay.
And I said Jurassic. We'll do it all. It's Pete Schwab and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Wow. I didn't know that a vacation or that a go-go song could get me that. I'm feeling it now, man. That was great.
I was trying to think of songs about dive bars. Couldn't come up with any quick enough. But I thought, you just came back from vacation. We'll play Go-Go's.
I think a dive bar, I remember back when I was doing stand-up, some of the old-timers, the old comedians that had like 20 years in, the stuff they would do in the bars of bathrooms shocked me. And they ran the gamut.
What happened?
Whether it was drugs or in there with someone else doing immoral things. Yeah. But it's all those constitute being in a dive bar. I'll tell you this. One time I had to go, how should I say this? Well, too earthy. I ate some kind of exotic food and I was sprinting around a neighborhood by Wrigley Field trying to find a bathroom. My buddy Rich Brown's in the car, leaning out, going, "He's having a baby." And I go into this bar with a Pabst Blue Ribbon sign out front that looked like it hadn't been changed in 30 years.
Yeah.
Sprint to the back of the bar. Everybody knows what's happening, right?
Right, right.
And I just went in the bathroom and I thought, I know I'm catching something in here right now, but I still don't care because you're that relieved when you make it to the toilet
yeah.
in that kind of a situation.
Right.
You know. All right, got off on a bit of a chat.
That's it?
You know, I went home and I took a shower. I asked the doctor, what are my chances of catching something on a Chicago tavern toilet?
Off at a clinic on the way home to get tested.
Right? You know what? I should have.
Yeah.
I was that convinced. But those are dive bars, folks, and that's what we're talking about tonight. So what is your definition? What makes a bar a dive bar? That is tonight's question. Tamara Dean will be here talking about her book, Shelter and Storm, At Home in the Driftless, in just a few minutes. And then our pal Chris Foran from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joins me at 7:20 to talk about Miller Lite. That's another good topic for a dive bar conversation.
Heck yeah.
Miller Lite's in a few of those places. It's the 50th anniversary of Miller Lite. And it kind of, this was interesting too, Todd. I found this in Chris's article that 4 of the top 5 selling beers nowadays are light beers.
I believe that, right?
I do too. But back then, they were kind of considered diet beers and an affront to masculinity and all that kind of stuff. And they marketed it brilliantly. I mean, less filling, tastes great with all these burly athletes. It was beautiful.
Man, there was nothing better than Rodney Dangerfield, right? Euchre was in those commercials back then. We need one pin, Rodney. Those were great.
They had all of them. Dick Butkus, John Madden. I mean, it was, and one of my questions for Chris will be, do you think people knew this is a brilliant marketing campaign? As a kid, I saw that, and it was so catchy, and it stayed with me, and it launched Miller High Life. It was brilliant.
I remember being a kid going to the lake at summertime, right? And we would recreate the Miller Lite commercials out by the lake, and somebody would have to play Rodney, and somebody would have to play
so
Bob Euchre
great.
And all that kind of stuff. That's how ingrained they are in my psyche.
That is like the sign of a great ad when it stays with you.
Yep.
You're as a kid acting out parts of a beer commercial.
I'm sure mom and dad were really proud of me at that point.
I think you've hit pay dirt. On the stream, Lil Irv says a $3 tall boy PBR. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But now that's trendy too. Like Pabst is, you know, kind of a trendy beer.
Yeah.
You could find that in an upscale place too. And then Lil Irv says the Hams Motion Light. Hams is definitely a dive bar beer.
I remember sitting, my parents frequented bars quite often, and there was one up in City Point, Wisconsin, which is kind of hunting land out west. And we'd go in, mom and dad would drink all night, and I would sit there and watch the Hams beer motion lights. You know what he's talking about, right?
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah.
And you'd watch that thing go round and round, and you're like, how does that work?
Yeah. I liked all those beer lights. When I was a kid at my grandparents' place in Three Lakes, Wisconsin, they had this Miller High Life.
Yep.
To this day, I think that's why when I drank beer, I drank Miller High Life because of this like light that would go around. It would go up and down the M, and it was just a cool bar thing, and they had a bar in their basement. I love all that kind of paraphernalia from dive bars, and I like dive bars. Tyler from Wisconsin Rapids, he's in the 608. He says, located on the Titanic. See, sometimes I do this, Todd. I don't remember what I was talking about when I text her.
Well, but what was it about the dive bar? Is he talking about a bar in the Titanic? Is that a dive bar?
Dive to get to
maybe
after the Titanic?
Maybe.
That's a real serious alcoholic who's someone willing to.
I mean, we've all been there. We've all been there, Pete.
Tom from New Berlin, he's in the 414, says, yes, a sticky mess, but hard-boiled eggs and pickled hard-boiled eggs. Yeah, that's a dive bar.
I've never had one. I've had conversations with people who have, and they say they're the best thing ever. I don't know. I've never had one.
A pickled egg?
Yeah. Have you?
I don't know if I've had a pickle. I've had a deviled egg, and as a kid, I would eat them, but I realized at some point in my life, I hate these. I'm never eating these again, and I don't. Conrad loves them. He flips out. He literally does a flip in that chair when I mention deviled eggs.
I know what I get him for his birthday. A little tray of deviled eggs.
Get him a dozen. Our pal Chris Casper from the 608 says, shake of the day.
Bar dice, I think, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that's what he's talking about. Again, I've never played, but man, that's a sound you hear.
You hear dice in a bar. Yeah, yeah. That's a great one. Thank you, Chris. Catherine from Saukville says dollar bills attached to the ceiling. Yes. That's a great one. How about a nice big pair of underpants too? Taped up to the-
dollar bills and a G-string, totally different bar.
I was thinking guys' briefs. That would really make it a dive bar. Jack from Merrimack says, you know it's a dive bar when there are 14 chopped Harleys backed to the curb out front. Well done, Jack. He's in the 414. Thank you, buddy. Tom from New Berlin says, oh, shake of the day. Look at that. So that is a Wisconsin thing. You called that one, Todd. Chris Casper and Tom from New Berlin are kindred spirits, I think. Exact same wording in those texts, too. Shake of the day. That has to be a thing. Chris Casper weighs in again and says, at least one bar stool is reserved for a specific person.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? I think
everybody's, you know, there's a bar that has like that corner stool or the one off. Yeah.
Like the norm of that place.
Yeah.
Sort of, so to speak. Chris also says sports betting. Chris also says pull tabs. I think Chris has been in a share of dive bars. I'm willing to accept all these.
Get him on the phone. Tell us all about it, Chris.
We'll read the rest of Chris's text during this mini series when we come back. It's always tough for me to talk when I come back from vacation.
You're losing it already?
I just trip over my words, you know. Luckily, you're here. All right, it's Peach Wabba and Nightlight. You got the Civic Media Radio Network.
Six till nine.
Change a hawk to a little white dove.
That's a good one. We were just talking about that last week, how much that song makes me think of summer. It's Peach Wabba and Nightlight. Welcome back, folks. I just love that song.
It's a great song. I mean, that's a great album, right? Wasn't that on Sports?
I don't know, but was the song you played when we went to break, was that Huey Lewis?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Couple Days Off, Vacation Again.
Is that what it's called?
Well, it's called Couple of Days Off.
Oh, wow. Look at you, man. I need is a couple of days off. That's why you're the master producer you are, is because you are able to find songs like that like instantly. That's very impressive, Todd. Thank you. Did that sound like I was not being sarcastic? You understand that?
I understand.
You're a brilliant
producer.
It's okay. Okay. It's okay. Folks, it is great to have you with me on this Tuesday as I segue back into work after a few days off. Conrad will be back tomorrow night. I know you're all very concerned about the lovable producer, but he will, if all goes as planned, Con's coming back, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As far as I know.
What if he's like just finished his first day at a new gig and he's got a suit and tie and a briefcase and he just never even told us?
First of all, thinking of Con in a suit and a briefcase.
I can't see it. Unless he could wear a hoodie and wear high tops. I don't think that's happening.
So I think Tamara's on StreamYard,
okay,
but not by video.
Oh, that's
I don't
okay.
have her video yet, but I think she might be there. Let's test it out.
Tamara, are you there?
I'm here, Pete. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. You know what? I'm just going to use my imagination as to what Tamara looks like. And she looks spectacular, like an author who I understand used to do radio. Folks, it is my pleasure to welcome to Nightlight the author of the book Shelter and Storm, At Home in the Driftless, Tamara Dean. Tamara, how are you tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me, Pete.
Hey, this is great. It's great to meet you. And I really enjoyed, I didn't make it all the way through your book, but I read several chapters and I just thought it was, you know, I love talking to people that I know I would never do something like they did. So it's very impressive. And, but let's start with you, the person, before we get to the author. You grew up on a farm in northern Michigan. Is that right?
I didn't actually grow up on a farm. My parents were farmers and came from farms, but I spent a lot of time on the farm that my mom grew up on in northern Michigan. And I was fishing and hiking and camping with them all through childhood.
And was that the UP or like the upper part of the lower peninsula?
The northern part of the lower peninsula.
Okay. Such
so big cherry orchards up there.
Yeah. Oh, all of Michigan is beautiful. It's a great state to drive through as well. But you, okay, so give us a little, before we jump in, because I've got a lot of questions about your book, but also just what got you there and your experiences and what you did. So to make that make sense to the listener, give us a little background on Shelter and Storm and what inspired you to write it.
Sure. Well, in 2004, my partner David and I decided we were indoors too much. We wanted to be closer to nature. And we also wanted to experiment with things like sustainable building and growing our own food and alternative energy. And we were just very curious. So we looked around for a place to start over. And once we saw the Driftless area of Wisconsin, like a lot of people, we fell in love and we thought this is the place for us to start over. I mean, if you've ever been there in the southwestern corner of the state, it's just a magical landscape with these steep limestone bluffs and narrow river valleys and spring-fed streams. So that's what we did. We had lofty ambitions and we did fulfill many of them, but in some ways we got waylaid. We learned a ton while we were out there. We also encountered so many interesting mysteries, and that's how I begin most of my essays in Shelter and Storm. I like to grab the reader with some kind of mystery or question, and then they follow along as I learn more about it and usually end up in a different place from where I'd imagined.
It's so great. And you're right about the Driftless area. I know when I used to do stand-up comedy back in the day, and sometimes I would do a car tour where I'd end up going through Wisconsin and then Minnesota. And I always loved going through Mineral Point. They have this.
Oh, yeah.
And then years later, I got to go to a film festival there. They have this cute little opera house. But it almost feels like when you drive through the Driftless area, you're not really in Wisconsin. It seems like it's its own kind of magical place.
And it's true.
Yeah.
And it's a landscape unlike any other on the planet, in fact. It's because nowhere else on Earth did glaciers miss an area for no obvious reason. In other words, the Driftless area is not higher than surrounding landscapes, and it isn't more porous. It's just a series of coincidences that caused the glaciers to go around this area. So it really, in the topography, it looks more like the Ozarks, I think.
You described that a little bit, I think, in the preface of the book. Why did the glaciers miss that area, or how did that happen?
Yeah, well, the glaciers, there could have been 24 of them that missed this area, so that's unusual. But they came down south from the Hudson Bay area, and they entered the Lake Michigan trough, and it was easier to go south across that area, what's now Lake Michigan. And then as they hit the trough of Lake Superior, it was so deep that after a while it, you know, caused them to slow down and stop before they reached the Driftless area.
Wow. That's fascinating. All right. Before we jump more into your book, in terms of the Driftless area, what I also got from your book was there's a great sense of community of people that go there, and a lot of people that were seeking, seemingly anyway, kind of the same thing you and your partner were seeking. Is that
exactly
what makes up that area by and large?
Yes, it's been a refuge for people for millennia. I mean, Ho-Chunk oral history talks about their ancestors migrating to the Driftless area when the glaciers pushed them southwest from what is now Green Bay. And then, of course, the European homesteaders came in the late 1800s. But more recently, a lot of homesteaders go to that area because the topography is so unusual that it hasn't allowed those giant swaths of corn and soy, you know, thousands of acres that you see in Iowa or Illinois, to come in. And so it's really friendly to small farms. And that's what a lot of people want to do. And plus, it's the headquarters of Organic Valley, which is the world's largest organic growers cooperative. And that attracts a lot of people, too.
It sounds like, and I'm going to be honest here, Tamara, I'm just going to come clean and I'm going to say, I wish I was more like you. I wish I had the resolve. Well, I really admire people that do these kinds of things. It's good for the earth, it's good for community, and it's good for your health. How does a person earn enough? You kind of touch on this in the book. How does a person earn enough to feed themselves and their family on a small farm? as you say, if they aren't growing so-called commodity crops, do you have to supplement your income somehow, or can you do it all as a farmer?
Yes. Well, I had great dreams of becoming a farmer, and I researched it, and I watched friends of mine contend with those floods that wiped them out and bankrupted them, and I decided I couldn't do it. I didn't have the risk tolerance, and I didn't see how the bottom line could come out positive if you weren't growing commodity crops like corn and soy in our area, which are subsidized by the USDA through the Farm Bill. But even commodity growers are usually depending on off-farm income. So somebody in the family has another job. It's very hard to make ends meet no matter what kind of farming you're doing. And I have a whole new kind of respect for farmers after living out there.
Yeah. My guest is Tamara Dean. She wrote the book Shelter in Storm, At Home in the Driftless. Tamara, where can people find the book?
Shelter in Storm is found anywhere you buy books, whether online or at your local bookstore. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to shelterandstorm.com, and that's the publisher's site for the book.
Okay, perfect. So there's a great line about farming you have in the book. And can you explain the passage where you say touching dirt was like taking antidepressants?
Yeah, one summer while I was gardening, I had a huge garden, and I thought, well, this is going to help me prepare to be a farmer. Little did I know that farming and gardening are not that much alike. But there was a research paper that came out that said there are natural antidepressants in the microbes in the soil. So actually, whether you're digging in the dirt or eating the dirt, you know, on the vegetables that you pull out of the ground or graze on while you're out there, you're taking antidepressants. But I also meant it in the sense of gardening being just such a fun, healthy, invigorating kind of pursuit.
What were you hoping to accomplish when you wrote this book? Well, it's a series of essays, but when you sat down to make this a book, what are you hoping people take away from it?
Yeah, I hope that it helps people approach nature with more curiosity and attentiveness. And also, if they feel so moved, to really indulge that curiosity and get involved, whether that's, becoming a citizen scientist, as I describe in a few of the essays in Shelter and Storm, you know, the citizen scientists who are testing waterways or looking for freshwater mussels are really doing a great service because our Department of Natural Resources just doesn't have the staff or funding to get out there and look in every stream, for example, and citizen scientists can make up the difference. Or whether they just want to plant their front yard full of native plants, grasses and flowers to attract pollinators, that's also helpful. There are many ways to get engaged, and I hope that readers not only find entertainment in my essays, but also some, inspiration.
Well, and knowledge too. I mean, for what I learned reading your book, the fact that you had to acquire all that knowledge first, and I think at some point in the book you talk about working for .com, which I assume was in a city. So in your opinion, when people decide to turn to farming or a simpler way of life, is it because they're disgusted with modern day conveniences, the rat race? Is the world too much with us? Or why do people do it?
Well, you know, I think everybody has their own reasons, but I do think there's that romanticism about going back to the land that a lot of people have, that we had. We knew we were naive, but I don't think we realized how naive we were when we set out. And so that attracts a lot of people. The idea of a simpler life and being closer to nature and also living on your own terms. I have to say that when we moved to the Driftless area, at least in our township, there were no zoning laws. So you could, build something out of wine bottles or tires if you wanted to. Nobody was going to stop you. And that attracted a lot of ingenious inventors and tinkerers and experimenters, as well as artists, because the cost of living there was, less than it would be in a city too.
So, all right, you were a writer, as I understand it, before you were a farmer. You're still a writer, obviously. You put out a book, but are there any similarities? Was there anything from writing that you could take to farming and vice versa?
Well, right. And I never did become a full-fledged farmer. I certainly did grow a lot of our own food. And I thought the similarities are numerous. You know, in writing, there's a lot of patience involved. You don't see the fruits of your labor for a long time. There's also a meditative quality about turning the soil when you're weeding a garden or planting plants, seeds in the soil, as well as when you're putting words on a page. I do think they're pretty similar.
My guest is Tamara Dean. She wrote Shelter and Storm at Home in the Driftless. It's available everywhere. Definitely check it out. We'll have a few more minutes with Tamara after this very short break. I'm going to ask her if she's ever seen the movie Lost in America, because it reminded me of Tamara. And we'll talk a little bit about Woody Guthrie and how Woody Guthrie relates to her book. It's a great book. This is Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. I am Peach Wabba. This is Nightlight. Coming up at 7:20, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel entertainment writer Chris Foran will be here to discuss the 50th anniversary of Miller Lite. And we'll have some movie and TV discussion, as we so often do with Chris. Our question of the night is, what makes a bar a dive bar? We've had some great answers. A couple dancing with no music or no dance floor, girl dancing at the jukebox, sticky seats, shaking the dice, all kinds of stuff. Keep those answers coming, folks. 855-752-4842. Right now, we have a few more minutes with my current guest. She's the author of Shelter and Storm at Home in the Driftless. Her name is Tamara Dean, making her first appearance here on Nightlight. Tamara, can you tell me about Ty and, I hope I'm saying this right, LMI or LMI? I think this is in your chapter actually titled Shelter and Storm. They're Woody Guthrie characters, and you draw a parallel between you and your partner and them. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Woody Guthrie had this idea that A House of Earth, which is the name of his novel, which was published posthumously, so he knew better than to send it to his editors or publishers, because he knew it wasn't going to get published in his lifetime. But he had this idea that his main characters, Tyke and LMA, ought to be building their house of earth, and this would represent, you know, the common people avoiding the banks. And this was the time of the Depression when people were withstanding these terrible dust storms and they needed some protection against the climate. They also needed some protection against the banks at this time, which were undergoing upheaval. And so Woody Guthrie himself had actually tried building a house out of mud bricks. He got this pamphlet from the USDA, and I saw a copy of this pamphlet, and it's just maddeningly vague. I don't know how anybody would do it. You know, you mix the mucky muck, it actually says that, of clay and straw and by foot or hand. But he didn't stick with it very long, and I don't blame him. It must have been frustrating. He just had that ideal. And we made a house out of, you know, compressed earth blocks, but we had a lot more technology behind us and people who had experience with it, so it wasn't that challenging.
That fascinated me, that whole passage in the book about making bricks or earth blocks and what goes into them and making a home, an adobe home, right? Really?
Yeah, right. And there were parallel walls of these bricks, and in between was a gap of about 6 inches into which we poured perlite insulation. So the home acted just as we had hoped. It was really warm in the winter with only one fire in the morning in the fireplace and one fire at night, even in the middle of winter. And it was cool in the summer.
What kind of, do the mud walls affect your Wi-Fi signal? Anyway, I'm joking, but do you have, what modern conveniences do you have to give up? Did you have cell phones or Wi-Fi?
Oh, Well, the cell phone service wasn't great. I'll give you that. But we had a great telecommunications company out there. It's now called Vernon Communications. And they had federal grants to bolster the rural broadband. So, in fact, we had excellent internet service way out in the country.
Oh, that's huge. Are you still living in that area in this house you built?
No, I'm not. Okay. And it's really heartbreaking that we had to leave. It's the subject of the 12th and final essay in Shelter and Storm, Slow Blues, which tracks my discovery of a rare blue glowing firefly called Slow Blues in the Driftless area, as well as my struggle with Lyme disease. One of the doctors in our area called our particular valley the Midwest epicenter for tick-borne illnesses. I had Lyme disease multiple times, and you know, I brought in ticks with the kale that I picked from the garden, and I just thought, oh, you know, our life there required so much energy for chopping wood and planting and harvesting and putting up food that I, with Lyme disease, I couldn't keep up with it all. So we ended up choosing to leave.
Well, that is kind of tragic, but what an experience you had going through all of that. I'm sure you wouldn't trade a minute of it.
No, absolutely. I learned so much, not just about practical things, but, you know, about bigger things, too.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie Lost in America with Albert Brooks?
Pete. Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't ask. I'm a terrible person to ask about movies. I just haven't seen many, but now it's on my list, so I'm going
to
see it.
I really hope you get a chance to see it because it's about a guy and his wife. He's an LA ad executive, and she works in HR, and they decide to drop out of society and buy a Winnebago and drive across country and walk with Native Americans like they wanted to in college, like an easy rider. And I'll just say this, their first stop is Las Vegas.
it sounds really great.
Yeah, they took a different turn than you. I have one more question for you. This is, and by the way, this book was the perfect way to segue back into the real world after a weekend of doing nothing. So I felt energized reading your book again today like I did last week. But you have a great passage on page 60 where you talk about the Kickapoo switcheroo. And it was kind of sad and made me laugh all at once. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, people from the Driftless area will know what that means. Kickapoo is the main river in the area, and it's called the Kickapoo Valley. But the Kickapoo switcheroo was the phenomenon of people switching partners. And often it would happen that, you know, a couple would hire a builder or a contractor, and the contractor or builder would end up with, you know, the wife or some other arrangement. And, you know, it ends up all coming out well.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Probably something they didn't anticipate being paid for, stealing someone's spouse. But hey, whatever works. And that's the kind of tomfoolery that happens in the Driftless area.
Yeah, it can. It can. But, you know, my partner and I managed to avoid all that.
That's so great. I'm glad to hear that. And I look forward to reading many more works from you. So thank you so much for spending some time with us tonight. Best of luck with the book and keep us posted, please.
Thank you, Pete. It's been a great time.
You're very welcome. This is Tamara Dean. Check out her book, Shelter and Storm, at Home in the Driftless. Just go on the interwebs, folks. You can find it many places. Tamara Dean, thank you very much. Todd Michaels, working the board, sitting in for Conrad tonight.
Yes, sir.
Spinning the tunes. There's no one slow dancing here tonight or at the jukebox. It's a dive bar Tuesday night. What constitutes a dive bar? What makes a bar a dive bar? That's our question of the night. We're coming back for Act Two after intermission. Chris Foran joins me at 7:20. It's Pete Schwab and Nightlight, Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.